kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining me, Cole Martin. Cole, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. How are you?
Doing all right. Anything fun for Memorial Day going on today for you?
I think we're going to fire up the grill later, but that's about the extent of it. That and probably, like, stand on the porch and shake my cane at the kids on their four-wheelers. That sounds like a good way to spend my Memorial Day.
Oh, God, you're still putting up with them. When are you just going to, like, beat them in the fucking throat or something to stop them?
I have threatened to, like, put some nails in a board and throw it in the road and just wait.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm a horrible neighbor. Get the fuck off those four-wheelers.
Well, you're not the only evil, sadistic one taunting and hurting other people. Also joining us this episode, Kenny Craner from Extra Mile Studios. How are you doing today?
I am good, thank you. I am very good. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is a pleasure having you on the show chatting with us today. Your game is called Triple O Ascension. And before we get to any of the big questions about the sales pitch or whatever else, first off, I got to know, why are you so evil?
I do feel, I listened to your review on the bus on the way in this morning. I feel I owe you both an apology for making such a horrible game. But I like to think it's horrible but fun. It's a nice mix.
Yeah. I just want to know who I send the ticket to for the replacement Xbox controller.
I'm surprised I haven't had any, you know, invoices yet for broken TVs and controllers from people.
Well, we're sitting here talking about how frustrating the game is. We should probably get into it. Give us the sales pitch. What is Triple O Ascension?
Well, it's a platformer, puzzler, speedrunner kind of hybrid, where you go from point A to point B, and over the course of the game, more and more horrible things try to stop you from getting to point B. As soon as you hit a wall, or a hazard, or, you know, if you go even slightly off track, you'll have to restart all over again. And it's a game about trying to grow your skills. It's very much a skill-based game. It's quite a simple game. There's not really too much to add in terms of the controllers don't really go anywhere. You're always doing the same thing. It's just the challenges that are put before you, they're what change. It reminds me a lot of the, did you ever play the wire loop games at, like, fairs and fets and things like that? It's kind of based on one of those kind of ideas where you've got to keep a very steady hand and try and get across an increasingly challenging set of hazards. Oh, sorry for the loud sirens. That's Glasgow.
Sounds like somebody broke a TV. That's what powers the little guillotines. souls.
Sheer frustration. The angrier you get, the faster they go. I like to think that.
Oh, Lord. Well, before we get into too much, I know, Cole, you usually get upset when I jump and ask all the questions right after another. So I am going to let you start off and ask the first questions.
I get to ask first? What is this tomfoolery?
Yeah, for real. You, go ahead.
You asked like seven, but it's okay. I'll let it go. So my first question is, you're the artist for Ascension, yes?
I'm artist, designer, coder, everything.
Everything. Why? Well, Joe already said, why do you hate us? So my question is, right, what drove the minimalistic look?
Scope, really, to be honest. I'm still relatively new in terms of programming and coding. I've been doing, my background is actually in architectural visualizations. I used to do 3D models for buildings, and I've only got into game development in the last 14 months. And so I didn't want to do anything that would be too challenging for me. I didn't want to make promises to myself about the game that I couldn't complete. So I kept the sort of the art style and the gameplay to a sort of minimalist approach where I If it wasn't necessary, I would just take it out.
What if the guillotine? If the guillotine's got left in, what's on the cutting room floor?
Oh, some horrible things. If I couldn't complete it, it wasn't allowed in. That was the rule. Just one giant blade. That was it. The game just started and finished instantly over and over again.
Cuts the sphere in half, and then you have to do it twice.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what I did.
I don't want to give you any ideas. I should stop.
It's hard enough as it is.
Like, after you die 1,000 times, you can just have Kenny's face pop up and be like, hey, who you are. We're killing the guest.
No, I've been fighting off a cold, actually, for the last week. It was a great launch day. I was terribly sick on the day of launch as well. It's been an intense experience.
So aside being sick, how was launch day?
It's a weird sensation. This is the first time I've ever made a game and released it. You know, I've made prototypes, I've sent to my friends and game jam stuff before. So I wasn't really sure what to expect. But I came into the office. I work at Extra Miles as an artist on other games, and they've acted as a publisher for my game. So I have had some help in getting the Xbox back end stuff sort of set up by one of the programmers here. So in that respect, it's not entirely been all me, but there's certainly been some involvement from other people in terms of just some input, and I've been asking people, you know, what do you think about this, or do you like these colours, and you know, things like that. So when I came into the office, they'd put balloons all around my desk and a big banner up saying Happy Launch Day. So I got off to a fun start. And then it was a bank holiday weekend here, so we finished up early and we all went for a drink to celebrate. It's a really satisfying feeling, whether or not the game ends up being a success, you know, financially or critically. I feel like I've achieved something by having a game out there. That's a sort of a personal project of mine since I was really young. So it's a good day. It's a great day, actually.
We seem to hear that from a lot of developers that come on the show, where they don't really necessarily care about getting rich and famous, but they're just excited about, like, hey, look, fire up your Xbox. That's my game. You can buy that on the store right now.
Mm-hmm. I think if you're getting into games and you're hoping for your driving factor is financial success, then I think you've probably already failed. I think if you want to get into making games, you need to love making games. Like the actual act of creating them, that needs to be the driving force, the ambition. And that certainly was the case for me, and that's why, however the game does, I will always feel a sense of achievement and accomplishment, because that's what I set out to do. Obviously, you know, everyone wants financial success, and people will set out to create a game that makes money, but I feel like if you want to make something that people are going to enjoy, you need to enjoy the process yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty standard for any type of art, especially, you know, one that's going to be consumed in such a way. You can't just, you know, sit down and go, I'm focused on the financial side of this, because that never works for anybody. There's a reason we have the term starving artist.
Actually, that's my own background. I graduated with a degree in painting and printmaking from university. I was a 2D painter. I know the starving artist line pretty well.
So you mentioned the starving artist, being an artist. We talked about architecture. How did you go from all of that stuff to video game design?
When I went to art school, my ambition had been to become a concept artist for a games company. It's always been a dream of mine to work, you know, in the games industry. And when I graduated, I applied for jobs as a concept artist with places like, you know, Bethesda, and I had all these high hopes of being, you know, the guy who could envision these characters that other people would have to go off and create and animate and implement. But it turns out that to get yourself into that side of the industry, you need to have some element of 3D skill as well in the first place. So after several, you know, knockbacks from concept artist jobs, I started asking for feedback, and almost universally people were saying, if you could do some concept art and show some basic 3D modeling skills at the same time, you'd stand a much better chance. So I started, I just loaded up some YouTube, then loaded Blender and looked into other sort of 3D modeling packages, and I started to teach myself how to do 3D modeling. And after a couple of years, you know, working in a bar job at the same time to pay the bills, and I was doing this in the evening, eventually I felt myself that I was at a level where I might be able to, you know, make some money from doing these models. So I put myself out there in every industry that I could possibly find that might want, you know, 3D models. And one of the industries that bit first was I got approached by a couple of architecture firms who were looking for buildings to be made up. So I did that for them. And then I got a sort of freelance contract signed with a couple of other architecture firms, and that sort of tied me over for a few years while I perfected the skills. But I knew that working in games was still my passion. So at the start of last year, I started sending out my CV, my portfolio, with all these architectural models and some of the games that I'd been sort of toying with in my spare time as a hobby. And the director here at Extra Mile picked up my CV and hired me. So eventually, I somehow found myself as a 3D artist off the back of a painting degree.
That's a pretty cool way to get there.
It was a long way around. It's taken, how long ago was that? 10 years? So it took a while to get here, but it certainly feels like it was worth it.
You took the scenic route.
Yes. Don't know how scenic Glasgow could be at times, but yeah. It's been fun. It's been
good. So what were the origins of 000 Ascension? Where did that idea come from? How did you get started with that?
So 000 started off as a game jam entry for Ludum Dare, Ludum Dare. I never know how to pronounce that. In April last year, I just got married, and I just got my job at Extra Miles, and I just thought everything was going so perfectly well, and it was in a very good place. And I'd done sort of small time game jams before, and I'd never really worked as a team doing something. So when the opportunity came up, I had a free weekend, I had nothing to do after months of wedding planning and stress. I thought, well, what would I like to do this weekend? I'll enter this Ludum Dare and I'll see how I get on. So I made a game called Fuel, it was called. And it was, I mean, if maybe see if I can find some screenshots or something to send you, because you can see the basic forms of 000 being made already in that. And it's a sphere, it's a small ship, and you're flying around it trying to dodge walls to collect fuel crates. I think it was 10 levels I think I managed to make over the 2-day period. And it got really well received. I was expecting, you know, nothing to come from it. It was more of a sort of learning exercise. But the feedback that I got from making that entry was tremendous. People seemed to really take to it. And I just felt like I had to keep going with it. So I did. And I just continued to work on it. The evenings and the weekends. It got to a point must be about September, October, where I felt like I had enough of a fleshed out game that it would be, you know, a little bit of fun. And I was eager to, I've got three older brothers who are all massive gamers, and I just wanted to show off. So I submitted the game to the Google Play Store and the App Store, the iOS Store, just with an on-screen joystick. It was a terrible idea. And the limited number of levels that was in at that point. Only so that I could send my brothers a code and say, look what I've done, look, I've got a game that's available that nobody's downloaded, yay. but I was worried that might infringe on my contract here at Extra Miles, so I thought I'd better run this past my boss first. So I sat him down, I showed him the game on the mobile, and I said, look, I want to publish this game to the App Store and the Google Play Store. Is this going to be a problem? And he said, no, it's a great game, and if you wanted to, you could hold off and we'll publish this on Xbox for you instead. And did I faint? I'm not entirely sure how I responded, but it certainly felt very good. And from that point on, I was splitting my time in work between working on 000 and working on other projects as well.
Nice. So what other stuff have you done with Extra Mile, or is Ascension basically the big thing you've done with them?
It's the big thing I've done since I started. We've got two or three projects on the go, but I think they're mainly under non-disclosure, so I can't really discuss what we are doing. But they released, when I joined, it was a tail end. They just released Shreddit and Aqua TV, which is two games, a game and an app. for Xbox and PlayStation, and work had just begun on this other sort of major project, so I've been working on that that as well. But sadly, that's boring to talk about because I can't talk about it.
I was just about to say, I'm guessing the big one is the one you can't talk about.
Yes, yes, pretty much that.
Mm. Triple O Ascension is Xbox exclusive, yeah?
Yes, it is, yeah. For a while. It's a limited time period exclusive. So we're hoping to have other platforms available by the end of the year.
Okay.
So more people out there get to pull their hair out.
That's what I was about to say. Is it an extended thing where you just hate us Xboxers for a while? Or?
Targeted hatred.
Like, what did we do to you?
It's like, fuck you guys the most.
We need to send him some cough drops.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine. I'm usually the one here hacking my brain now. So it's fine.
I've got a nice hot cup of tea, which I thought that would help, but it's done nothing. Absolutely nothing. Sorry.
Friggin' tea.
It needs some liquor.
That's how to do it. Yeah, it's late enough out there. You could throw some liquor in there. That'll be good.
I'd have to go away for 10 minutes to do that, so I'd be happy to wait.
I can pause the show right now. And welcome back, everyone. It's been 10 minutes.
There's now liquor involved in the show.
I just had a question about why Triple O.
Which is a good question. What brought on the name of Triple O Ascension?
The game has no text in it, so I wanted to try and carry that across to the title. So originally the title was just O, because it's a circle, and originally the ship was a wee circle as well, and the times were all measured in circles, and it was all circle based. So I thought, oh, that'll do. That kind of sums it up. But then if you search for O anywhere, it's not going to turn up. There's no way anyone's ever going to find the game if it's just called O. I quite like the idea of the Triple O because of the times. But again, I didn't think it was going to really appear anywhere. My boss suggested that maybe just sticking one word on the end would maybe help, visibility of the game. And this is one of the things that did actually get dropped, was there was a slight narrative, a very, very, very tiny, tiny bit of narrative in the game that I didn't take out, I didn't work on any further. Whereas the idea was that you started the game and the ship would be some kind of sort of semi-conscious being and have like an eye in the middle or something. And then at the very end, you were trying to ascend, you were trying to get out of this ship, you were trying to escape the ship and go off and be free. So there was this kind of idea that, you'd ascend over the course of the game from being trapped to something else. So there was I had a few names in mind for things that might have that kind of connotation to it, and we did a poll here at HTML about what people liked the best, and Ascension came out top. So that was the one that we ended up going for. But it's kind of cobbled together over the course of the development to become Triple O Ascension. I still would have liked to just do O, but yeah, I think I would have shot myself in the foot somewhat.
Yeah, there's a game on Xbox One called Q. And that was a bitch and a half to ever find anything on, because it's just the letter Q. That's it. Yeah. So I'm glad that your game has a title that makes it easier to find in stores.
Yeah, there's not a lot out there sort of similar title-wise. So over the last 3 days, as you can imagine, after launch, you just end up Googling yourself constantly, or Googling the game constantly, to see what reviews are coming in and what people think of it and stuff. And yeah, that last 3 days would have been a disaster if I wasn't able to find anything.
So what has the consensus been so far?
I'm surprised. It's been overwhelmingly good. All the reviews that we've had have been really positive. Like I said, I was expecting death threats in my DMs for, trollers out the windows and all this kind of, but really it's been, I think people know that it's, I mean, I don't make any sort of attempt to sell the game as being a massive big AAA title, and it's got all these features and all these extra bits. You know, the trailer has no text, the game has no text. It's a very minimalist approach to creating a game. So I think people don't really have any expectations when they go into it. So I'm hoping that the positive reviews is from people just enjoying the what's quite a simplified gameplay experience. It's not. I've done one thing and I've tried to do it as best as I possibly could. I've not tried to add in all these extra features. So it's been touch wood so far. It seems to be very positive.
How about the difficulty?
You can answer Joe first.
Sorry, what was the question? Sorry, Joe.
What's the general consensus on the difficulty? Do people out there have the guts to beat the game, or are they like us and they're just awful at it?
No, everyone says it's super easy. I don't know what you're...
I don't believe you.
No, I think the overall consensus is it's tough but fair. Like, when you die, I like to think that as often as possible, you feel like it's your fault rather than the game being unfair. So I think there's an element of sort of forgiveness that people have in the difficulty for that. Like, it is a difficult game. It's very reminiscent of old school arcade games. If this was a game in an arcade that you had to play a quarter for every time you wanted a shot, no, I think I'd be rolling in it by now, because it's got that kind of really difficult curve to the game where, you know, if you're good at it, you're going to really enjoy breezing through these levels at lightning speed. So people know it's tough, but I think they came to expect it, I hope.
What was your question, Cole?
Well, now I forgot it.
What was the dog's question? I heard him saying something.
Donovan's question is, why are there still four-wheelers going up the road?
With nails sticking out.
I really did just forget the question that fast, because my mind flipped to, Lord, don't let that four-wheeler get loud. I'm sorry.
This is the kind of professionalism you only get with the SML podcast, by the way.
I love it.
Shit.
just so matter-of-factly, shit. So, next question. How much do you regret coming on the SML podcast?
I regret coming on with that cough syrup. Pardon me.
At least we're all a hot mess today. It's not just one of us. We're all a hot mess today. And it works perfectly.
I'm in good company.
So here's a question that none of our listeners are really going to be able to appreciate as much, because it's an audio only show. But why is your hair so amazing?
I wonder what your viewers are visualizing this. I've got it sculpted into a Statue of Liberty on top of the head. I'm lazy. I haven't cut my hair in forever, so it just seems to go out the way and up the way.
It is a beautiful afro. I am impressed by the size of it. See, I'm bald. Like, I got nothing going on up top, so I'm just straight up jealous of what you've got. I want to know if you can mail some over to me. So I could just duct tape it to my own bald, shiny head and pretend that I'm young once again.
Well, I can see from your picture you've got a cat. You can just strap that on.
He has plenty of cats.
I do. I tried taping them to my forehead. They get all wriggly and they start clawing, and then you lose an eye because they're all pissed off.
Same thing happens with us. It's fine.
Yeah. So that's just the cat on your head.
yes, that's what it is.
Cole, did you remember your question yet, or do I have to keep making shit up?
No. That question's long gone. I did want to ask, though, and we deviated from the topic before I could do it, but I wanted to ask what brought on changing the shape of the ship if it was originally a circle and now it's not.
It was too hard to see what direction you were facing. really, to be honest, it was confusing, and because there were so many circles on the screen at any one time, trying to figure out which was trying to kill you and which was actually you became a bit tricky. So having something that was a different geometric shape kind of helped to sort of
So you mean it was even more difficult at one point?
I'm trying to think when we got testers involved. Was it December or January we got, and this one poor guy in particular just couldn't get past things at level 15 or something. And he was trying so hard and I felt awful. And I kept making this level just a wee bit easier just to try and, you know, let him get through it. And I've never felt like such a horrible human being than seeing these guys whose job it was to try and beat these horrible challenges. I mean, you guys, it's sadomasochism if you're going to do it to yourself, but when someone's paying you to do it, that's just it's not fun. The game, I saw there's quite a lot of helping hints for indie devs on you know, Reddit and various other places, and they all say the same thing. If you think your game's too hard, then it is too hard. So you should have seen what it was like a few months ago. It's been ramped down pretty dramatically, and I still feel like maybe it could have been a bit easier in some places. There's certain levels that are really difficult to do, but those are the ones that I thought I would keep them in there as, you know,
reminders that we're human.
Yes. Yes. There's a couple of levels that are really tough, but I got the most enjoyment from those levels. So we've done a very small update this morning to make one of the levels a tiny bit easier, because we did notice that a lot of people were getting stuck on one level in particular.
Which level? I got to know if it's one that I've been to or if I'm still not good enough to get there.
Have you reached the part where you have platforms that you control by stepping on one side or the other?
Yes. And I fucking hate those things, by the way. I'm on the one that has the three of them that you got to move all at the same time.
You got past the one that people were struggling with, then. That's good.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think I found the next level that you're going to have to update.
I know them all intimately, and I still struggle with them. Like when we were doing last minute tests, you know, in the last couple of weeks in the build up to launch, I felt like my time schedule was really tight and I had a lot of stuff to do, and, you know, managing all the PR and stuff as well. And yeah, I spent far too much of my time trying to complete one of these bloody levels.
The level designer that you could yell at him.
I know, I feel like I could punch him in the face. Yeah. There's definitely a steep difficulty curve to it. But the fact that, you know, there's more than a few people. The first guy who actually emailed after the game launched completed the game in, I think it's 2.5 hours from start to finish in our first go. And at first I thought, no, he's hacked it or something. So he's done something to it. That's not possible. But there's people out there who I know are going to be that good. They're going to, you know, and it'd be challenging for them. I'm not saying he did coast it, but I think most people, it's going to be a really challenging game. We'll wait and see what happens over the next sort of few weeks if I need to make any other tweaks in the future.
Have you considered taking any of your original level designs and grouping them all together, releasing them as DLC, you know, just for the super masochist people out there who need something even harder and more infuriating to play?
There's a whole section of levels that I cut out. Not because they were difficult, just because it wasn't fun. I mean, that's half the challenge. Is if something is super difficult, that's fine, but if something just isn't fun to play, being difficult doesn't make it any better for the player. And you can be the best player in the world, doesn't mean you're going to have any enjoyment playing a level like that. It needs to be a sort of balance between something that you actually enjoy doing. I see some of the Super Mario Maker levels that people create, and I just think, why would anybody even do that? Like, what's there to gain from making a level that one person in the entire world's going to finish? And then I realize that I've actually done that, so maybe one day we'll have super tough DLC, but we shall see.
Who's responsible for those triple O times?
Mm-hmm. Who's responsible, did you say, sorry?
Yeah, like, who set those records? Was it you? Can I yell at you?
Do you want to vent first before I tell you, or will I just tell you that? Yes,
some of those maps are insane.
That's one thing. So the update that came out this morning, there was definitely a couple of levels that a couple of times. So what I would do when I was setting these target times was I would play the level through, and then I would try and beat my best time. And I'd try and beat my best time twice. And then whatever my second best time was, I'd go and shave about a second off of that, so that it should always be slower than my absolute best. But some of them, I intentionally, actually, some of them are really, really tough, because I wanted, if people got all the way through the game and they finished the game and they were wanted to go back and replay, when you've completed level 90, it would be boring, I think, to go back to the beginning and have all these times be really easy to just sort of sweep through. So I wanted to put in some triple O times that were specifically there for people who were replaying the game after completing it. So they're there for the people who have that level of skill, essentially.
That makes sense.
Some of them are like 5 or 6 seconds. And they're just, you see it, like, it pops up and it's like, you completed it, is like 43 seconds. And I'm like, fuck yeah. And then triple O time's like 3 seconds. And I'm like, fuck off.
There's a couple of shortcuts as well that are hidden. So some of the triple O times are actually not achieved by necessarily going through the course the way that you'd expect to. And so they're there as a reward for finding the sort of, I say, secret path. There's not too much going on. Once you've done a level several times, some of these times might become a bit more obvious as to when you have to go through certain parts of it, or maybe there's bits that you don't have to go through at all. So, yeah.
I was proud that I triple-O'd the first world. I was excited that I did that. I'm like, this is my peak in life. I'm never going to get better than this moment. So I've accepted that this is my fate in life. I triple-O'd world one, and that's about as good as I'll be.
That's still better, I think, than about 60% of players at the moment.
Wow. Attract
achievements. No, I think it's about on par, I think, with most of them. Yeah, but again, I mean, the triple O times—that's that's an extra. Like I was hoping that the feeling of completing a level by itself would be, you know, an accomplishment and a sense of achievement. And the triple O times were really there for people who really wanted to push their skills.
And who really want those achievements?
I don't know yet. I've not met them. I'm hoping they're out there somewhere. Yeah.
Can we just swap the achievement for getting all the triple O times for one for dying a million times? Because that's much more doable.
Yeah, you just have 1, 10, 100, 1,000, 1,000,000. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I got the die 10 and die 100 times on the same level.
Wow.
It was bad. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
I know.
That is an achievement. Literally, that's an achievement.
So I'm guessing, have you taken this game to show off at different conventions and stuff like that?
No, actually, I have not. It is, I wasn't really sure. It's a small game. It's just me. And I mean, Extra Mile Studios are publishing it, but we're not, you know, it's not a massive company. It just felt like something that we wanted to just release and see how it goes. And if, you know, people like it, if you want to play it, then we'd maybe think about doing expos and stuff and build up to a PS4 or a Switch launch. So this is more about not testing the water, because really I'm beyond excited about it being out on Xbox and it being something that people actually are paying money for. That's still a very weird sensation that people would want to do that. I feel like I should be paying people to play this as opposed to the other way around. It's one of these kind of things that if we weren't sure if the game was going to be a hit or not. So going to expos and things, that can be very expensive, and that would be a very big, it would add to the risk factor in terms of actually, you know, whether this game is going to be a financial success or not. So,
no. Well, I know it's only been a few days so far, but has there been any kind of indication if it's moving well?
We don't really know yet, and we won't know until probably some point in the middle of this week. But at the moment, all I can kind of really do is look at reviews. I'm not expecting it to shift millions of units. It would be fantastic if it did, but I'm expecting it to be quite a small sales amount, mainly because it's a very niche market. Like, not a lot of gamers, I think, these days want to play games that really frustrate them anymore. I think people want games that tend to be a bit easier than the kind of experience this offers. So it's more about making something that the people who do want that experience, those guys enjoy it. Yeah, that's kind of how I'm thinking at the moment. I think maybe it's just my Britishness. I don't expect big things, and I'll see what happens.
That's a good way. It's a good way to. Sorry. See, you're getting me sick now too.
Sorry.
It's good. It's good to just keep your expectations in check and hope for the best. Because I think it's really solid. Just the difficulty might scare some people off, but at least you guys were honest up front in the game's description that says it will frustrate you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think though that this has a future with games done quick.
Yeah. I like the sort of speedrunning element of it. I think could really interest. I hope so.
Like, there's going to be somebody who figures out a way to just break everything and fly through these levels. And then you just like 13 second times, and then I will be invoicing you for broken DVD.
Yeah. So will I. It's funny because we took this. It wasn't an expo. There's an indie game developers association in Scotland. There's a branch here. And they had a sort of showcase for games just in Glasgow, and it was just a wee meeting in a pub, and everyone kind of brought their games and got to sort of experience what other folk were doing. And I brought Triple O's a couple of months ago, so it was nearly finished. And I opened up the laptop, I got everything all set up, and a guy sat down and proceeded to absolutely blast all my best times. I could not believe that this guy, like, just. The 10 or 15 people had played and sort of struggled to get through the first 10 levels. And again, this was another thing that taught me that I had to, you know, ramp down the difficulty a wee bit again, because everyone was just struggling. But then this one guy just sat down and just, boom, 2 second time, boom, 3 second time. And I went home, that was on a Friday night, and I spent the entire weekend trying to beat his times, and I just couldn't do it. So I don't doubt there's people out there who are going to be able to absolutely nail this. And I would love to see that, actually. I would really like to see somebody, you know, shave milliseconds off each other's times for us. I think that's kind of what the game's built to do.
Well, next time they take signups for Games Done Quick, you should submit your own game. I don't know if they have that often where a game's creator is running their own game at the show. I think that would be neat to see.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'll look into it. That'd be great.
So what kind of games do you like playing in your spare time? When you're not working on Ascension or you're not working on other games with EM, what kind of games are you enjoying at home?
Over the last year, it's every time I've loaded up a game, I've instantly thought, "Oh, I should be doing this. I should be doing my own." So I at the moment, I've been veering towards games that I've sort of pick up and play kind of mentality. I'm currently addicted to Slay the Spire, which is still in beta, I think it's on Steam. It's a phenomenal game. I love that game. I play Hearthstone on the bus to and from work every now and again, and so that's been my kind of mainstay for the last sort of 6 months or so. But I'm a strategy addict. I like Civilization games. I think I've got about 2,000 hours clocked up on Civilization 5.
Wow.
So that's my jam. I love that stuff. Age of Empires, Civilization, all that kind of stuff. I've been playing them since I was young. So I'm looking forward to, now the game's done, I'm looking forward to maybe starting a new map.
Is there anything coming up that you're looking forward to?
I'm waiting to see what E3 brings. I think I mentioned to you in an email before, but my daughter was born 3 months ago, so my time scale for playing games is pretty limited at the moment. So I'm starting to think further ahead. You know, towards Christmas time, you'll maybe start to be able to sit down and play something at length. So I'll wait and see what E3 announces. I would love to see Final Fantasy VII brought out at some point this year, but I just don't think it's going to happen. actually, I got talking to one of the developers for a game that's coming out tomorrow, I think, actually, called Die for Valhalla.
Oh, yeah.
That looks really cool, actually, so that's another sort of...
I'm embargoed. I can't tell you anything about it. Sorry.
I bet it looked cool. That's about all the information I'll be picking that up tomorrow, Dave, and giving that a shot. So it sort of falls into that sort of category of, you know, pick up and play for half an hour at a time. I need to kind of get my head back into what games are coming out and start, you know, reallotting my time scales again. It's been baby or game recently.
See, that's the benefit. My kids are all older, and at this point, I'm just like, sit down and grab a controller. I need a co-op partner. I have built-in co-op partners.
Yeah, counting down the days till I can do that.
You only got about, I don't know, 3 more years to go. You're good.
Hey, at least you guys have kids that you can or will eventually be able to play with. I just have cats.
You train cats.
You need like, one of those cats that's got like the fixed finger so that you can teach it to play.
I've been trying. Every time I sit one down with a controller, I'm like, all right, listen, you have to hit this button when I tell you to. They just start licking themselves. It just goes nowhere.
See, when the Kinect was functional, you could use the Kinect and like code your own game where the cat licking its butt was enough to move a character. So many missed opportunities with the Kinect.
I'm trying to remember what Kinect game it was. There was one where you could, you know, go in different positions and it would take a picture of you and you would use that kind of like as a platformer. And for a couple of them, I was just holding cats and taking pictures. No, it wasn't Fru. I think it was like a Commander Cherry or something like that. And it would take pictures of whatever you were doing and save a screenshot. And I had a couple of them of just me holding cats and I would submit them to the developer and be like, see, I told you I'd use a cat. That's as close as I got.
That's the idea for your next game there, Kenny, is a game that a cat can control.
Yeah, cat and poop. Yeah, I can do that.
Cat. Sure. Where do you plug the wire? Cats. Come here, kitty. Come here. Come here. Don't be scared. Oh, man. Cole, did you have any other questions you want to ask? I know we've been chatting for a while. I don't want to take up all your day, Kenny.
Okay. I don't think so. I think I'm good.
Is there anything that you want to tell us about the game that we haven't asked?
No. I think between your review that I listened to and the conversation here, it's, like I said, it's a minimalist game, so there's minimalist chat to be had about it. but no, it's been such an honor to be able to sit and talk about it, so thank you for that.
If you were going to give a new player some tips to that they were just starting out with the game, what kind of tips would you give them?
Use the break. There's a break on the left trigger.
There's a break?
There's a break on the left trigger. And that's one thing. So because there's no text in the game, there's an icon that flashes up on the right-hand side that says, you know, gives you the symbol for the left trigger. And a wee sort of picture of the ship slowing down. The best that I could do without any text saying, this button makes you break. And nobody seems to pick up on it. I made it big, and I made it glow, and I made it flash, and it just still nobody ever seems to use it. Break more and break often.
And not the controller.
And not the controller.
Well, Kenny, where can people get the game? How much is it? Give us all the details.
Okay, the game can be got in the Xbox Store or the Microsoft Store on your PC if you don't have access to your Xbox right away, and it is $15 or £12.49. I really hope people pick it up and leave a review and let me know.
And where can people stay in touch with you and what you're doing?
So you can get me at Kenny Craner, my Twitter handle, and at @000Ascension or at @000Ascension on Twitter, or you can drop me an email, which is kenny.craner@extramilestudios.co.uk. I've been getting loads of emails from people asking quite a lot of questions about the game, so I'm more than happy to answer anything that anyone would like to ask.
Any good standout questions that people have asked?
Why is it so hard? No.
I don't know if we asked that one or not. Did we ask that?
Why is it so hard? Because I like hard games. I don't really know. Just turned into that. Most people are kind of asking questions along the lines of, it was primarily before the release. It was, you know, when's it coming out and what platforms, etc. So, it's a fairly self-explanatory game. You don't do much, and it's all in the trailer.
Cool. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Well, Kenny, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Everyone else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more show. Kenny, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
I'm so sorry for everything.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Kenny at EM Studios for dropping by and chatting about Triple O Ascension. Go check that game out. It will drive you fucking crazy. But we do have some more stuff to take care of this episode. Review time, obviously. We are starting things off. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's been a long one. I'll address that later on in the show because I don't record anything in order.
It's like one massive jigsaw puzzle every week for you.
Pretty much. It's fun to look on the sheet of paper and be like, I recorded that at like 1. That was at like 4:30. That was at 7. Now it's 10 o'clock. Got one more to go later. We'll hear about that later on as well.
So. Piecing all the episode together. Like, okay, I have this squiggly podcast piece, but I need the L podcast piece. Can I find it? Is it in the stack? There it is. It was that cool interview I did. Let's just slap it in there. The entire episode disappeared.
You are the tall, straight piece in Tetris because you are tall.
There we go. And I also make the best combos.
And you could take out 4 things at once.
Exactly. You take out 4 reviews. It's like, bam, 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 bam. Done deal.
Well, today you just got 2.
This is true.
So I guess you're a square block this time. I don't know. Or you're the long piece just going into a 2-hole thing, 2-deep.
Whatever. Yeah, I'm the L piece. I'm the L piece that's not getting a 3 combo.
There you go.
Just kind of
rest problems.
Fun problems. Tetris-y problems.
Let's jump into these. First game to talk about is called Omen Sight, developed and published by Spearhead Games. It released May 15th on PS4 and Steam for $19.99. Omen Sight is an action murder mystery game. You are the Harbinger, a powerful mystical warrior who has witnessed the destruction of the world. In order to prevent annihilation, you are destined to repeat that fateful day and solve the murder of the godless priestess, whose death precipitated the apocalypse. Pernell, what is this game?
A surprising game that I did not expect to exist at all. Like when you said it was a murder mystery initially, I was like, it's probably some straightforward game with an overarching. No, it's an actual murder mystery. So, very beginning of the game, your main character is the Harbinger, and you just kind of, you just kind of exist. You just appear out of nowhere into this world that you exist in. And everyone knows what a Harbinger is. I guess it's in the legends or the storybooks or whatever. So, there's 2 warring factions, names of which elude me. It's almost like an anime because I'm like, the cat people and the forest people, which is almost what it is. So they are both fighting this long ongoing battle. And within these battles, there is a small event that occurs, which is, as you mentioned, the killing of the godless priest. And this ignites the return of the demon serpent Voden, who destroys the world literally and figuratively. So, at this point, you get a witch who is also the narrator of the game, kind of pulls you away to like the spirit tree of life. And at this point, the way the game works is that for every time you come across a major character's death in the game, you make a bond with their soul. And then from that point on, you are able to go back to the beginning of that person's last day. To try to learn about what took place in their day, maybe help them along with their day, and in the process, maybe come across some clues to lead you towards, the death of the godless priestess and who did it, so that you could hopefully go back into a day and prevent it from actually happening in the first place. What kind of actual gameplay, however? It is an action combat game. So it is a 3D kind of top down of sorts, and you kind of run around. There's like a light attack button and a heavy attack button. The enemies are coming at you, and you're just kind of swatting them away in a typical combo fashion. Light, strong, heavy, 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 whatever. Heavy attacks can knock back shields and launch guys sometimes. And you're just kind of railing these combos. As you level up your guy, which occurs by killing enemies and collecting spirit orbs, and then going back to the main hub, which is the spirit tree, and meditating with them till you max out and reach another level, you will gain more abilities. These abilities are attacks, which by constantly attacking enemies and not getting hit, you build up a sort of energy gauge. And that energy gauge, every time it makes a full fill, you can perform a specific move, like launch a spirit soul bullet, or set up a delay of time, which makes everybody around you stand still, or do something cool like a lethal strike, which is an instant kill. Though by the time you've nailed down enough attacks to nail a combo down and do a lethal strike, you're probably going to kill the guy anyway, so it's never really. But The game itself is a lot of fun in this method. It's meant to inspire you to go fast, attack quickly, dodge quickly, all within finesse and sheer just pluck and moxie. Hell, the game actually gives you bonus experience at the end of every day if they consider your gameplay to have been stylish. So
that's pretty cool.
I love something like Devil May Cry-esque style. The one complaint that I had about the game, which is kind of loose, is that I wish the enemy variety were greater. As I played the game, you essentially are fighting the rat people from the remember their freaking names, but there's like a forest tribe, which is like the rat people and like some bear people, but mostly rats. You end up fighting rat people when you're helping somebody from the cat people's tribe. And when you're helping the rat people tribe, you're fighting, cat soldiers who have like heavy shields and like sabers and the like. And this is pretty much the types of enemies you regularly fight. Sometimes you like little purple ghost people show up that they actually describe in the game. They explain them to you. So they won't be just a weird entity. The game does tell you about them, but they show up and you have to fight them. But for the most part, even though you repeat these days, it's the same enemies. And that unfortunately made me a little bit on the sad side. But I genuinely became engaged in wanting to know who the heck killed this person, because they show you moments where it's like, oh, it's totally got to be this guy. So the game will say, do you want to go back in to the day of the general of that guy? Or do you want to go back to the day of this guy who hates that guy? And you're like, okay, who will likely get me to him first so I can figure out what's going on? And you choose the guy, and eventually you're like, holy crap, is it that guy? I don't know. Plot twist, crazy shit. And it's not a spoiler in that sense. I'm just basically telling you that there are twists. There are plot twists in the game. And let's be blunt. If there weren't plot twists in the murder mystery game, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, so, seriously, what would be the point?
Exactly. It's the guy that's obviously the guy. Whoa, clearly you guys messed up. So, no, it is not. But I genuinely became invested in wanting to know who the heck killed this person and why they want the world to come to an end, because that kind of falls into my wave of RPG dope tropes, which is that a RPG villain's goal is to destroy the world. It's like, why would you really want to do that? Like, I can understand somebody wanting the world to end, yes, because you're just an absolute, you're a nihilist of the utmost. But to want to go through work and effort and sheer just grit to end the world, like, why even bother?
Conquer it instead?
Yeah, just conquer it, or just, I don't know, make it as absurd as possible. Like, I don't know, I'm going to just make it possible to get as much money as possible and then just blow it on things that just make the world feel more of a chaotic place. Just, there are things you could do if you're going to expend that much effort than to just let the world go. It just seems dumb to me, but I look forward to figure out why this guy wants to do this. I want to figure out who it is and figure out why they want the world to end, and it better be something interesting or else I'm going to freaking lose my shit. But anyway, this game is a lot of fun to me. I wish the enemy variety was better, but I enjoy getting the experience level ups. And I totally forgot to mention, you can also buy upgrades too. So in addition to the spirit orbs, there's also like these sort of blue crystals that you can pick up from treasure chests hidden on the map and also from certain destructive objects and kills. And those objects can be used also at the spirit tree to purchase upgrades like health increase, mana increase, different things like ability cooldown. So whenever you do a partner, a day of a person you meet. So like I told you earlier, I love how I'm just like jumping around, but this is how I do things. So remember I mentioned earlier how you make a bond with a person and that's the person whose day you go back to.
Yeah.
So when you go back to that person's day, you're actually accompanying them on what their day was like. So Radica is the leader of the rat people army. Ho ho, name games. and you're running around with her, and every one of these friends has a R2 ability where when you press R2, it triggers an attack or a buff or an assist that they can do to assist you in the game. You can buy upgrades to make those cooldowns from those abilities go shorter so that you can use their assist abilities more often. You can do things where your heavy attack does more damage, or your light attack does more damage, and so on and so forth. There's a lot of cool little upgrades you can get. Never enough to really make you choose and pick, I will say. I usually could get to the store and buy it out when I was coming to, when I had a chance to go shop. So that's one thing that kind of made me sad. But I'm still buying abilities that makes my guy cool, fight better, and it's still nice to see a little bit of upgrades after every chapter. So it's not all bad. I just wish there was a little bit more option there. But
no.
Then I'd probably be complaining that everything costs too much money. So where's the balance? I don't know. But the game itself is quality. I enjoyed what I played of it. I like the idea of it being a murder mystery and actually having to get clues after each day and then determining from those clues what you should do on the next day and whose day you should even enter into. Yeah. So it's not like you just give it away. You actually have to deduce different things.
Got to work for that shit.
Damn Skippy. And I like that. It's very unique in today's gaming structure. It's still a hack and slash attack game with experience and level ups, but that murder mystery side plot and the way the story progresses, can't think of any other games like that right now. And nice. That's always a big plus for me.
So $20 on this one. What's your verdict?
Definitely fun. If you like hack and slashy games, and like I said earlier, you kind of like to see people do these different things in a way that is not stupid, this is definitely worth your time. Just go in being warned that enemy variety is kind of lacking, but the mystery makes up for it.
No, that's the important part. The mystery makes up for it. But you got one more to talk about. That is called Disco Dodgeball, developed by 82 Apps, published by Zen Studios. Released May 22nd on Xbox, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Disco Dodgeball Remix is a ridiculous physics-based future sport combining robots, one-hit-kill projectile combat, and crazy dodgeball action. Dodge, deflect, and catch enemy fire as you perform ridiculous aerial stunt shots with your mustachioed unicycle robot, and enjoy the voice of a booming monster truck driver announcer when you score. Purnell, tell us about this one.
It's really straightforward, unexpectedly. It is a literally a dodgeball game. You start the game up, you start at level one, because the game gives you a bit of like a ranking system. And as you play exhibition mode, what is exhibition mode? Let me start that up. So exhibition mode is essentially you start the game, and they throw you in an arena, usually broken up in a series of waves, like 1, 2, 3, 4 waves or so. Enemies will come from the opposing side of the screen, and there are various dodgeballs on the map. You have to pick them up, pretty much charge up your shot by holding down like the trigger button, and then let it go to throw it at the guy. If it connects, they get knocked down, and depending on the criteria related to your throw, you'll get bonus points related to it, and they'll give it a really winky-dink name, like with the truck driver voice, as you mentioned, announcing it. You know, reverse kill. Ricochet shot, man. Yeah, cool. And after you beat a number of waves, you'll likely go into the sales screen between levels where it lets you take the money or points you earn, wherever you want to go with. You can take that, and you can spend it on upgrades for your robot, such as, I don't know, easier to catch the ball, or speed up, or higher jumping, which is honestly something I love because you can't jump for crap in this game. But when you buy the jump upgrade, you kind of get a bit of like a floaty jump. So you can jump higher, but you're kind of committed to the jump. So you can't like jump and then turn backwards. You're going to go where you were going. But doing that makes it easier to do things like get trick shots and like air catches and stuff like that. Catching the ball is surprisingly challenging. In the tutorial, their game's like, hey, just catch the ball by hitting the throw button when the ball's near you. And you do it, and it's like, easy. You always get it. And then you play the real game, and you miss every goddamn time. And I think I've come to accept that the way that you catch the ball is not just that you have to be able to see the ball coming towards you in time to press, but I think the ball has to be in the crosshair of your robot and coming towards you, and you're looking at it, and you catch it by hitting the trigger button. So that is a bit of an annoyance, but once I got used to it, I was able to catch a bit more balls. And every once in a while, every once in a while, like, a boss or unit of enemies will come out. So one of the main bosses I remember was like Flamebot. Flamebot had a health bar, so he took multiple hits to go down, and he threw literal flaming dodgeballs at you. So they would leave like a slight trail of fire, so you couldn't like touch the path the ball went, or you still take damage and get knocked out.
Ooh.
There was another group of robots I remember fighting that had like, they threw super dodgeballs, so they were giant balls, which then made them easier to catch, but also harder to dodge. And there were jetpack robots that kind of rocket around the arena, and you can't dodge. They're harder to get away from because they have better vantage points than you do. I'm not quite 100% on how some of it is acquired, but as you play matches, you also get like construction items, so like a barrel, or like a battery, some sparks or whatever. And you can take those to a submenu from the main screen and construct them using a crafting system, which is odd, and turn the crafted items into cosmetic accessories, like new outfit for your robots, like new shades or like a new body for the robot. And just things that allow you to make the robot more like your own little custom robot man. But they don't do anything to make the robot control or play differently. All cosmetic.
Yeah.
So. But it's still fun in that regard. Like, if you just want to dabble around, if they're giving you the stuff anyway, there's no harm in just building stuff based on what the game gives you from winning and eventually dying in matches.
So it sounds like you were pretty good at this game.
Yeah, it was honestly an enjoyable title. Like I think this is still falling under that whole, I would have expected it to be good, but when I played it, I actually had fun with it. And really, you really can't go wrong with Dodgeball, too. Well, you can, but you'd have to be really bad to go wrong with Dodgeball. And these
Well, it's funny you say that.
Oh, not about the gameplay. I mean, like, the design of the game. But how did you do with it?
I did absolutely awful with it. When I went in, I wasn't 100% sure what style of game it was. And as soon as I saw it was it played like a first-person shooter, I was like, uh-oh, this might be trouble for me, because I've gone over on the show many times before. I am awful at first-person shooters. I'm not quick at aiming. I'm not quick at moving. I'm not that great at it. So playing this game for me was so fucking hard because I couldn't hit shit.
And you also got it. It's worth admitting at this point, based on what you described. So it's first person. And typically, if you're playing something like Gears of War or something, if a guy comes up from behind you shooting bullets, you probably will hear the bullets or even take some damage and then realize, shit, I got to get behind some cover. But in this game, there's one strike and you're out. So mm-hmm. If you're not capable of being aware of your surroundings and knowing that even though I can't see my back, I shouldn't run in a straight line or I should try to get behind a wall or something, it is very likely that you will get beamed from the back and knocked out of the game. You won't even know who hit you or how. And if you're not good at first-person games, that could be a problem for you.
Yeah, you are the success story to this review. I am the failure of the review. Because, like, I love the game. It is a cool-looking game. I love the style of it. I love the music of it. I am just awful at first-person shooters, so I'm bad. Like, really, really bad at the game.
So we definitely need to administer a seizure warning, though, because this game has some crazy flashing lights. And I can't promise anything. Things could happen to your vision or your existence. I can't promise that you'll be fine. So if you have seizure or epilepsy warnings, this game is one of the few in years where you should heed it if they tell you do not play this game with epilepsy.
Nice. Well, overall, $15 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's at least a try. It's hard to do the buy primarily because, also, like Dodgeball, like say the old like Super Dodgeball games from Technos Japan and all that, a lot of the fun from those came from being able to play with your friends as well. Heck, even a lot of the customization is meant to be like, hey, I played this game, I built up some goods, so now I can play with people. But if you want to play a Dodgeball game, I also can't think of too many like it right now, if any, that aren't the Technos Japan game, in which the last one that got released was ages ago on like the 360. And it was an import from Japan, so you can't read the damn thing. but I would say it's worth buying, at least trying it, because you'll get a fix of Dodgeball. And if enough people try Dodgeball, there will be some kind of contingent to be playing with friends. And I don't remember if it had an online purpose or not. Does it have online?
Up to 12 players. I dabbled in the online, and as expected, I got fucking wrecked, but I had fun.
And there were people there, which is important. Yeah. So if there were people there. Yeah, it was a
quick match, too. I got in real quick, played, got my ass kicked real quick. So, yep, online is there.
Yeah, so it definitely adds volume to the try it, because if enough people try it, then that will maintain the online presence, which means there will be more people to play with.
Agreed. I give it a try it as well. Unless you are awful at first-person shooters, then you might want to take a bit of a warning before you jump in there that this is pretty much a first-person shooter with dodgeballs. But
yes,
and it's still fun. Well, for now, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap those up?
Nope. They were just fun games. I'm glad I got to play them. Enjoyable. And by all means, hopefully you guys give them a try and enjoy them too.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Fallen Legion Rise to Glory, developed by Yummy Yummy Tummy Incorporated, published on the Switch by NIS America. I love that name. Released May 29th on the Switch for $39.99. Return to the battlefield of Fenumia, where a besieged nation stands on the brink of war. See the conflict through the lenses of one who would restore her kingdom to its former glory and one who would see a new nation rise in its place. See the story from all sides anywhere you go in Fallen Legion Rise to Glory. Checking this one out, Joe Stratman, Henry Jones, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing just fine today. How? And I was about to ask how you're doing, but I just fucking did that. So I'm a moron.
Yeah, it's okay. It's
so how are you doing?
Memorial Day, so we got some other things in mind, and also I've got cover letter writing to do.
It's a hectic Monday. So
yes,
everyone else gets three lax. Yes. Everyone else gets to relax, and we're working our asses off bringing you this show. So I'm going to ask you twice how you're doing, and I'm not going to feel bad about it anymore.
Sounds good.
So how's Fallen Legion?
It's pretty all right. It's a little bit hard to explain exactly what it's like because it combines like two or three games. And if you looked at the art style, you would be probably think this was a Japanese developed game, but it's not. It was only published by NES America, and Yummy Yummy Tummy is not Japanese, but they certainly have an art style and you know, designs and animations that would make you think, oh, this would definitely be up NES America's you know,
right in their wheelhouse.
Wheelhouse, yes. I hate it when my ADHD destroys words. See, it's a
long Monday. Long Monday. We are tired, folks.
So anyway, this game combines a lot of elements of older games. The most prominent in my mind is Ogre Battle, and I know the press coverage is going to be like, it's just like Ogre Battle, buy this now. But but what makes me think about it so much is because that it goes about going different paths and has a morale meter for your troops that changes depending on your actions. And there's a lot of stuff moving through the empire and going through battles and stuff. And it feels like you have an overview of everything, but there's nothing, I wouldn't say there's nothing that is, you know, closely centered, because you do get to know some troops, some princes, and a lot of your decisions feel like they're being made pragmatically instead of like, with a deep knowledge of these characters and making decisions on, you know, based on your emotional response to who you want to protect or who you want to kill or something like that.
Yeah.
Mainly, how this game is set up, you have this map of, the nation that you slowly move through as you go through the game. And you can either play as Leander, who is a, legate in the Imperial Army, or Cecile, who is the princess. And the circumstances that have just come to light is the emperor is dead. So now Cecile has to go back to the capital to claim her spot on the throne. The thing about that is that giving her the message is this weird grimoire that speaks. And
those are always trustworthy.
Oh, completely trustworthy, 100%. And Leander, the legate general, doesn't really believe that this grimoire, who has advised the emperor and has put the empire in a sad state, is not the right thing to rule this. And if Cecile takes over, she's just going to do the same thing her father did. So Leander, you can play as him and spark a revolution that, you know, you leads you to being supreme ruler, or whatever else the multiple endings have in mind for you, or you could be Cecile and take your right spot in the throne. So you can choose between those, and you will see things from one side or the other, and sometimes there'll be some overlap, and sometimes the generals and main characters from one side can speak to you, and you can even recruit them if you make the wise enough decisions. So what mainly happens is you go into a spot on the map, and either a story, like visual novel style story, will pop up, or you'll be on a battle screen. And the battles are mostly live action, where you hit A, B, or Y for your various troops. And they explain this by saying you have Leander gets pieces of the grimoire, while Cecile has a grimoire, and the grimoire can access this ocean of souls, which can pull up these super soldiers that can fight for you. And that's who you choose to fight instead of having to command an army. So you go through piles of enemies, and sometimes they're soldiers, sometimes they're goblins, sometimes they're whatever. But while you're going through these battles, after you complete one, sometimes you'll get a prompt that says, farmers are being raided by, you know, barbarians. What should, will you do? You know, you can fight them off. You can just let them go, or you can pay somebody else to deal with them. And each one has a, either a stat bonus for your characters, or it is a choice that will increase your morale but not give you so much of a stat boost, or some other results that you don't know about until you make the decision.
That's so, how they get you. That's how they swindle
you. That's how they get you. So you would think that if you have soldiers that are behaving badly and you can, and you imprison them instead of executing them, that would be a good thing to do. And for the first couple times, it's okay because your wardens are happy because they have, they can do their jobs, and people are happy that the criminals are off. But eventually, you have to take these criminals with you on your trip, and eventually that becomes too much for them to handle, and morale will go down. Or if you pay too much money, you only have a finite amount of money. So if you pay the farmers for your crops, for their crops, eventually you run out of money to stock your army, and that lowers morale. So you have to be judicious with how you cordon off things. Like, you have to execute some people. You might have to let some people go. You might have to do some bad things to farmers and threaten them and steal their crops. And all of this will change how the game flow goes. Like, you'll be able to access other areas, or you won't be able to access them all. And sometimes you'll get an extra character you can use in battles, and sometimes your characters will turn on you and attack you. So,
dicks.
Yeah. Although sometimes you have to be a dick, because eventually you have to, like, choose one side or the other, and it feels like you have to be an asshole to like, your literal brother, or to get something you want, or you have to indulge in a prince who is mostly wants you to do things for them in order to get them to protect this part, or else they'll just let barbarians, like, knock the crap out of you or something.
It very much sounds like a game very much where you're not picking black and white. It's very much just different shades of gray the whole time.
Oh, yeah. There's some black and white things, but there's, as you go along and find out, sparking a bloody revolution in your country is not a simple matter. You have to make a lot of black and white decisions depending on, okay, this guy is obviously in it for himself, but I need this guy to get me through this part, or otherwise there will be a rebellion on my end. So what can I do to satiate him or her, and what can I do to make sure the people don't feel like they're just going to get one, they're swapping out one, you know, barbaric ruler for another. So,
yeah. Now, I know this game was originally released as two separate games on PlayStation, and this is bringing the two of them together. Is this kind of like that one Fire Emblem game that had two different versions, and then there was a third one that had everything mixed together?
Not really. It's the two separate games, and they have interweaving stories, but they don't. There's not really an extra mode that brings them both together. There are branching storylines and some replay value you can get from unlocking extra characters. Like, there are various characters where, depending on the choices you make, they can recruit. And there's a super secret character, which the press information has told me not to reveal, but... There's a super secret character where you have to make a specific route of decisions, and you can collect that. So you have branching passes, different endings the story can take, depending on your morale and what decisions you make as a ruler. And that's about what they added. They did add extra branches, levels, and boss fights. And there's also a... New game plus mode that allows you to use all of the people you have collected from a previous game to this game. And then there's a one life mode where,
oh god,
if you die in the game, you die for real.
if you die in the game, you die for real. Oh my lord.
There is crossover character support where if you unlock these characters in one game, you can unlock them in the next. So it doesn't matter if you've collected them in the one thing. If you've unlocked them in one, you can use them in the second in battle.
Yeah. So basically, there is a shitload of content.
Yeah, I would say each game is 10 hours apiece, but you can play them through multiple times. Although, playing through it once is probably enough for me, just because the narrative is decent enough, but it feels like you're on the outside looking in, that there are only a few characters you get to know and get to talk to on a regular basis. And a lot of the other characters you get to know in the middle of battle, and there's just like a one sentence prompt that this guy is doing this. What do you do? And then you can select from three things. And then sometimes the decisions aren't very clear. Like there are two clashing armies at this point. What do you do? And it's like, it'll say, do you admonish? Do you forgive? Or do you punish? And it's like, which one am I admonishing? Which one am I punishing? And you wouldn't know unless you go through the level and there'll be dialogue prompts in the middle of the level where it says, how could you have done this to me? I thought we were friends or something like that. And then you're a terrible guy. We hate you. And then morale goes down. It's like, okay, restarting the game. I didn't know. I thought I was doing the other thing. So, and a lot of these characters have the exact same character design as each other. Like all the princes look the same and a lot of the peasants look the same. And a lot of the soldiers, there are only about four or five. So it doesn't feel like you're changing things. It just feels like you're moving through another different set of people who have the same design. But so
just everybody's twin.
Everybody's twin. And then the only, they have random character descriptions in the loading screen. And that's how you get to know these people for the most part. And aside from the major points, like there's a princess you'll have to meet who will decide if you help or don't, that decides a major point of the game. But she is one of the rare few, and the rest, it feels like you're going over the same spot and doing the same thing. The only thing is when you're in the stretch to the end of the game, and there are more varied enemies. Like you will take on the undead, the soldiers, and goblins in a same round. So it doesn't feel like you're in the midst of it and making decisions based on people you know. It just feels like you're going through. And just,
you're playing a video game, pretty much.
You're playing a video game. Yeah. So it's, well, I'm sure it's budget limitations on their part, and there's only so much they could do. True. But
anyway, the game sounds really good. So $40 on this one. What is your verdict on this?
It's a try it if you like this kind of game. It's, you know, RPG, live battle, and some tactical stuff. And if that, you need to scratch that itch, it's good for that. I don't think I would put it and buy it just because it's a little pricey for that. But it's pretty decent, and the battle system is good and responsive and does reward you for playing it well. And it does make it easy to play it well.
Nice. Well, Henry, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts about the game?
Not much. Just it's pretty decent.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Shift Quantum, developed and published by Fishing Cactus. What an amazing name. Released May 29th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, PS4 for $19.99. Greetings, subject 32763. Welcome to Shift Quantum, the latest version of our immersive experimentation system. Shift the world, twist your environment, bend your mind to unveil its secrets, and solve each brain-drilling level while experimenting your own custom levels on other subjects. Checking this one out. Ian Griffin, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Not too many people ask that. So thank you. Henry asked earlier, but, you know, aside from him.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. How's the weather down your way?
You know, it's toasty out. It's getting to be warm. I kind of miss, you know, I miss winter. I liked winter.
Yeah. It would have been nice if we had an actual spring instead of the
winter direct to summer.
Yeah. Yeah. The winter that wouldn't get the fuck out until, you know, Mother Nature put foot up its ass.
Yeah. It's a real motherfucker. But,
yeah. Cause I mean, I still remember getting snow on the last day of April.
Yeah, yeah, fuck that. I miss winter, but not that much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place, and, you know, but May is not the time nor the place. Get out.
Anyway, Shift Quantum, how is this game?
Shift Quantum is amazing. I love it. It takes a very simple concept and really explores the potential with it. Because, you know, as usual, when you give me a game to review, I usually read like the little blurb on the Steam page, but I kind of avoid, I even avoid watching the trailers just because I want the full.
You cold, just want to go in fresh.
Yep. The whole cold turkey, gaming experience. I want to be pleasantly surprised or pleasantly disappointed or woefully irritated. You know, that way I don't have any dispositions when I jump into the thick of things. And Shift Quantum, I thought the concept was kind of nifty, because it starts off at it has a really nice way of progressing. It's like here's basically the core mechanic. Okay, this is what you can do with it, and the levels kind of get a little more complex. And then when it feels that you've grasped that aspect of the gameplay, it throws something new and interesting, and then it kind of explores that potential until you've gotten it down, and then it throws something else in there. And this process repeats until you kind of get to a point where it's like, okay, well, now we're going to start using all of this stuff together, and the combinations of all those aspects like just completely elevate and enhance the gameplay to the point where it's like, I'm playing to, obviously like get through, and I haven't beaten the game. And that's another thing, the content in and of itself. I probably blasted through 40 levels, and I don't feel like I've even gotten through half the game.
Wow.
I could be totally wrong, but...
So what is the core mechanic of the game?
Okay, well, Shift Quantum is a platformer where basically you... It's sort of a... I'm trying to think. I haven't played a whole lot of platformers lately, so it's hard to kind of compare it to something. But basically, you're kind of in a giant stage, and your objective is to get to the exit. And there's also like little collectible things that you can grab as well along the way for some achievement purposes and stuff. But the core mechanic of how it works is that the entire thing kind of has a somewhat monochromatic aesthetic. Everything's in literally black and white. And what you can do is the whole Shift Quantum thing is you basically inverse the level. Like basically, if you're familiar with the artistic concepts of positive and negative space,
mm-hmm.
Basically, for example, like, when you start out, you're a dude, and I can't remember if you start out in the white or the black, but anyways, just to pick one as an arbitrary example, the entire level, all the platforms, everything you stand on, all the ledges and everything, they have a hard black color to it. And those are all the physical objects that you can interact with. When you press a certain button, you invert it. Like your character literally flips through the platform he's standing on, and everything that's solid becomes open area, and everything that's open area becomes solid. That's probably a really horribly convoluted example, but let's see here. Hold on. Where's that blurb I sent you?
But basically, you hit the ground, and then you switch from the black to the white, and everything flips upside down.
Yeah, yeah. And
so you're on drugs.
Yeah, and admittedly, this is where the slow progression, because it kind of helps guide you, because it actually took me like maybe two or three levels and a solid chunk of just I'm just going to stare at the screen just to kind of visualize what I need to do.
Yeah.
Because it's the sort of thing where you either wrap your head around it immediately or you need some time to just really process what needs to be done. Like, it's like, I got to get from point A to point B. How can I get from here to there as the level currently stands? Well, I need to get up on that ledge. But obviously, that ledge is too high for me to jump. So I'm going to have to shift everything. So where am I going to end up standing when I shift everything? And how, and it's just kind of it's just amazing. I love it. And it's one of those things where, like there have been games where I've played where someone comes up with a really novel concept, but they fail to explore the full potential of it. Like mm-hmm. You'll go through the game and you'll just kind of wish like, man, I wish they really did more with this, or I wish they really did more with that. Quantum Shift takes us and they just go, they crank it up to fucking 11, man.
Nice.
All right, here we go. Oh, that's my goofy one. But yeah. Let's see here. Quantum Shift asked the question: are you familiar with the concepts of positive and negative space? Because your brain is about to have the most mind-bending three-way with them, whether it likes it or not. And until you see the shit, whether you like it or not, until you see the shit in your sleep. And yeah, it is one of those things where, like, if you play it, like, you can play this for too long. Sometimes it'll get to a point where you just need to just stop, step away, and just recuperate.
Dude, I put a fraction of the time into this game that you did, and after I played for, like, I don't know, an hour, hour and a half, something like that, and took a break, I was seeing shit in black and white. And even, like, I would look at the wall and be like, well, what if there was a line there? What if I was on top there? How would I get up to that box on that shelf? Like, my brain was fucking with me. I say that's the mark of a good game.
Oh, it is. Oh, it definitely is. I definitely recommend this in every way, shape, and form. I mean, I think I clocked in about, like, maybe 2-3 hours because, you know, and I wasn't even really speedrunning it, you know, and the really awesome thing is that, like, you know, like I said, I got to a point where, like, there's switches to activate and deactivate certain platforms, and you have, like, push blocks that are only interactable when you're in the appropriate shift. You know, some of them will become solid when you're in one shift, and then they can create holes for you to exploit when in the other. So you have to place them and just create your own little labyrinth to get to the exit.
And the best part, you just mentioned creating stuff.
Yeah.
You can create your own levels in the game as well. So if you're bored with the main game, there's going to be a bunch of levels there waiting for you to play. And if none of them are good enough for you, fucking make your own, you whiner.
Yeah. Yeah, and
why am I insulting our listener?
No, I mean, like I said, I mean, I made it to about 40 levels, and I can, you know, because it has a really weird, like, you know, like the level select page is really unique and interesting. I kind of like the aesthetic, but it's kind of hard to tell how much further you have to go in the game, and I could probably see like another like 24 levels ahead of me from my position on the Strand.
So there's a lot of shit to do in the game anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit to do in the game, just the base game itself. And if you're really into it and hardcore and you go through and beat the thing in record time, I would assume for at least PC that there's definitely going to be like a community workshop. I mean, especially with the potential of user-made levels, people should and could be able to swap them back and forth, because it would seem kind of lame if you could, you know, I mean, if you make your own levels, then, I mean, obviously you're going to know how to beat them by default.
Yeah.
So, it would be awesome to, I'm assuming, to share, but, you know, everything about it is really just so enjoyable. I mean, if you're looking for a really good platformer with a really new twist, this is definitely something worth checking out.
Cool. So $20, what is your official verdict?
For $20, you can definitely get $20 worth of entertainment and gameplay out of this. So it is a definite buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good. You do have one more game to talk about, and that is called Far Lone Sails, developed by Okomotive, published by Mixed Division, released May 17th on Steam for $14.99. Traverse a dried out seabed littered with the remains of a decaying civilization, if I can talk. Keep your unique vessel going, overcome numerous obstacles, and withstand the hazardous weather conditions. How far can you make it? What will you find? Ian, how far did you make it, and what did you find?
Well, I mean, there is an end game to it, and I did reach it. But, to start off, the art style is very interesting. I thought it was very enjoyable. I kind of liked it. It kind of created a very bleak setting. And this might, you know, this might be enjoyable for some, and it might be kind of dull for others. I mean, it's definitely the sort of game where either you're going to like it or you're just going to think it's boring as fuck. But the plot in and of itself is somewhat minimalist. There is kind of sort of a plot that you kind of put together based upon what you see and what you find as you travel on.
Mm.
So, you know, there is that aspect, and it's really interesting because, you know, in this world of kind of dark and subtle and muted colors and everything, because, you know, as you travel along, you can definitely see different stages of, you know, the world's decay and all that kind of stuff. And you play this like adorable little character who wears like this little red rain hat, and I call it a parachute poncho, because you know, you can't die from falling. If you jump in an exorbitant distance, your little coat kind of inflates and you slowly kind of float down to the ground. And it's really cute. It's cute. Yeah. But, basically the key is you start off and you kind of go through and get a rough idea of the mechanics. And the mechanics are very simple. And you eventually jump into the Okomotive, which is the giant vessel. It's a very steampunky kind of vessel. And you kind of learn the mechanics of how it runs and how to run it efficiently. And it's really not that overwhelming at all. It's pretty simple. And once you get the routine down, I mean, you can keep it going at a steady clip. And eventually you'll get additional parts for it, which kind of make things a lot more interesting. And every now and again, you'll kind of run into an area that's kind of sort of a puzzle thing. Like you kind of have to figure out how to like open a gate, or there's an instance where you park on a platform and it kind of descends into a facility and you have to figure out how to raise the platform back up to the surface so you can keep going on your journey.
That's neat.
And, you know, it's not really super hardcore in the gameplay. It's kind of more of a, I don't want to say it's like an experience. Like, I don't want to compare it to like a walking sim.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is possible to fail, but there's steady checkpoints throughout the game. Because that was one thing I was kind of wondering, because the way the description makes it sound, it's like basically how far can you get this contraption until it craps out or until you fuck up. And then you have to go back and start over again. And there's actually kind of like an odometer in the vehicle itself that kind of supports this, but it's honestly really not that relevant. I mean, it just kind of gives you a rough idea of how far you go. The only downside is that it can be argued that it's a short game, because it seems that the average play time is maybe about 2 to 3 hours, depending upon how fast you try to get through it, or how, you know, whether or not you decide to take your time. And I do believe it's priced at, was it $20?
$15.
Oh, $15?
Yep.
It, you know, that's the only thing that would really give me pause, is that a lot of people might not feel that a $15 price tag is worth what you get, especially since once you really get the handle of the mechanics, I mean, you can kind of blow through it fairly easily. I mean, it's more about experiencing this world, you know, it's kind of exploring it. And I can't really get into it, you know, the details, because I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
Because there are some interesting revelations that you pick up on as you travel. And it's cute. You know, it's nifty. It's interesting. And, you know, the ending in and of itself is pretty nifty, I guess. Like I said, I mean, I don't want to get into it because I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, I understand.
And, you know, and there are some interesting instances, like, for, you know, like eventually you get like a sail. And you don't have to rely on running the engine, and you can save your fuel and use the sails if the wind is blowing. But you also have to be conscientious of the fact that, you know, if you're not paying attention, you'll end up clotheslining your sails and break the shit out of them. Which can cause problems if you don't have a particular tool by which to fix them.
Yeah. Well, overall verdict on this one for $15?
I would give it a try it. Like I said, I mean, some people might feel that $15 is asking a little bit much. If you can find it on sale for like 10 or less, definitely buy it. I mean, I think for $10, you can probably get a nice little experience out of it. I mean, I know the Steam summer sale is coming up, so.
It might be like 10 cents on there with how Steam summer sales are.
Yeah, if it's under like $7, definitely buy it. You can definitely get $7 worth of entertainment out of it. It's a nifty little game. It's a nifty little experience. It's a nice, fun little something. I mean, it might not have a whole lot of, you know, replayability, but there are, you know, achievements and stuff that you can try to shoot for.
Nice. Well, Ian, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up on those two games?
Not really. I mean, I think they're both very interesting games. Yeah, I mean, if you feel that they're, you know, they'll tickle your fancy, especially Shift Quantum, definitely look into them. Yeah, definitely look them up.
All right, next game to talk about is called Knights of Pen and Paper Plus One Deluxier Edition, developed by Behold Studios, published by Plugin Digital, released May 29th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. The ultimate pen and paper RPG simulation experience set out on a grand adventure in this turn-based retro-style pixel art RPG inspired by the great titles of the 90s. Take on the roles of in-game players, taking on roles of their characters in traditional pen and paper RPG session in the ultimate meta role-playing experience. Checking this one out, Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Joe. How about you?
No, it's been a day.
Has it?
It has.
Are you going to let in the viewers onto what kind of day it's
not
been?
Not at all.
You already covered? Oh, well, gee,
not
whiz.
At all. Fuck that. too stressful. I've been doing this show all day. If people listen and they think, oh, he probably recorded that on like a part of it on Saturday and then Sunday and then Monday and then no, this has all been in one goddamn day and I'm tired and I'm near the end of it and it's all out of order. So just fucking tell me about Knights of Pen and Paper.
So the game's description is pretty apt. You play as both the DM and the people, playing the little campaign. And mm-hmm. So not only do you get to choose like your classes of like, you know, your rogues, your mages, your, I think there's a thief. I'm not sure. I didn't use a thief if there is one, but you know, there's all these different classes you can choose, but not only do you have to choose the classes, you also have to choose the people who play them. So, you know, you can have your grandma be a character, your little 4-year-old brother, the pizza delivery guy. yeah. Like, you know, your average college bro, we'll join in the game. And you start off, you can start off with, I think, 4 people. Yeah, it's 4 people total. But then as you go through the game, you unlock, you can unlock more stuff from the store or buy stuff from the store. So you can actually add in 2 more players. You can use different classes, all that kind of stuff.
Which store? Is this for the RPG or for the people playing the RPG store?
Yes.
Okay.
There are 2 different stores in the game. The extra slots and the extra classes, that is for, I would call it the meta store. You know, not the actual in-game store. But also in the meta store, you can unlock other stuff like that will decorate the room that you're in. Like you can buy wallpaper, you can buy like an arcade machine, you can buy all this other stuff that has an actual effect on your game. Like, you know, you're like everyone will get like 5+ HP or like the arcade machine adds like 10% attack bonus or something like that.
That's awesome.
But it is really cool. It takes you forever to save up for that. But, you know, once you do it, you know, it definitely helps you along. and then so you can decide where you actually go in the game. If you want to go to the town, if you want to go to this forest, like, the DM setting up where you can go and like, you know, what's in each town. And the only thing that you don't really, I mean, actually you do have control over which missions you do, but like you're given a set of like, these are the missions that are available. And then you can decide how you want to go upon it. Mm. Like, let's say like, you use the mission where like one of the first missions is you have to kill a bunch of rats in town and you can actually decide, do I want to take on no rats for like whatever reason, like you won't get any experience, you won't get any gold, but you know, hooray, you did the mission. like, you know, you can decide, do you want to take on like 1 to 5 rats, that kind of stuff. And like the game will tell you like, okay, this is how much we think you should be able to handle right now. But if you want to do more, that's, you know, your own prerogative and, you know, have everybody die. And then of course, like you can you pretty much do all the stuff you would normally do in an RPG, like you people eat your recipe and all that other kind of stuff. And then you just move out. Now, if you want, as I said, like if you want to go to the forest, if you want to go to like the dungeon that's at the bottom of a mountain or something like that, all that kind of stuff, you can do it in this game. The only downside of it, and it's to kind of be expected, like when you have that much control over the story, it's like there really isn't much of a story for such an expansive game like this.
No.
Like, I mean, it's really just, it's a string of missions. Like, you know, like, have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons?
Yes, years and years ago.
Nerd.
And- Fuck you. I know you played. Don't you give me that shit. Actually, it's, I used to play with my dad when we were kids, and then I tried again in like the middle high school years, but it was never actually games of D&D. It was evenings of make a character. Oh God,
and then go
it's
home.
Late. Let's go home. Let's meet again next time. Get back together. Let's make new characters. Fuck you guys. I'm not coming over anymore.
All right. I still have my character sheet from like the one or two times I played in college, but
you fucking nerd.
whatever. So anyways, like, I don't know if you ever had like a good dungeon master, but like, you know, you have that, like, they set up a story that's going to take like 10 plus nights to get through, you know, it's like,
my dad was an awesome DM.
Well, all right. Well, unfortunately the DM for this game is not the best.
Mm.
It's really just like a string of missions that are loosely tied together. So that's part of the downside. The other downside is that it's grinding. It is a lot of grinding, which, I mean, it's true to the pen and paper thing, but be forewarned, like, you know, this is not going to be a game like Fable. This is going to be, like, it's going to be an old pen and paper game, just, you know, you're playing it on your Xbox instead of, like, down in a basement with guys that smell like Cheetos.
Yeah.
You know.
Cheetos not included.
Right, of course, you have to go off to 7-Eleven to get them. But, you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, I definitely recommend this. It's a lot of fun. I definitely recommend this, like, whatever platform you get it on.
So your official verdict for $15?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This isn't even like a one of like, yeah, get it when it's on sale. No, $15, that's fair.
Nice. Totally. I'm going to have to grab it myself. It's been a long time since I really got to enjoy D&D because, you know, we went over those high school years already. So it'll be fun to actually play it for once.
But if you got over your high school years, why do you keep hanging out by your local one, Joe?
Shut up. That's not fun to talk about in public. Anyway, you got one more game to talk about. That is called Super Hyperactive Ninja, developed by Grimorio of Games, published by Jandu Soft, released May 22nd on PS4 and PC, May 25th on Xbox One, $7.99 on Steam, $8.99 on console. Super Hyperactive Ninja is a fast-paced, hyper-caffeinated action platformer in 2D designed for those who want a real tough challenge. Recover the stolen coffee before you fall asleep. Use the power of caffeine to make your way. Jacob, what is this game?
It tries to be like the Dark Souls of like speedrunning games. So there's going to be a lot of memorization. You're going to die a lot. And every time you die, oh, I wouldn't say every time you die, but I'd say most of the time you die, it's frustrating and cheap. I mean, that is the game in a nutshell. You are this ninja who is getting tired. And so your life meter, which is, you know, how caffeinated you are, is slowly, I wouldn't say slowly, but it's dwindling down as you run through the game. And so you need to keep picking up all these, like, cups of coffee and pitchers of coffee throughout the game, all the while, dodging spikes as you, like, fall down pits, slide down walls, jump up stuff, and there are enemies in the game, and of course you have to memorize where they are. You have to memorize how they're facing you, all sorts of other stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's a frustrating game. I sucked at it. And I mean, not that I don't suck at most games, you know, I mean,
true,
that is
very true.
Long running commentary, for SML, but this game, I don't know. I couldn't really get into it.
Yeah, I picked this one up myself because I wanted to give you a hand in reviewing this, and it is definitely a frustrating game. The platforming always feels just not tight enough. Like, you would hug a wall and hope to drop into an opening, but you would always just drop past the opening, so you'd have to jump back and then jump back and then jump back, just over and over.
That happened to me so often, and like the openings that you get always felt like it was just short enough that you would never like get that jump in. And even then, when you did, you die like 5 seconds later, and it would pop you back to the last checkpoint. And it never felt fair.
Yeah. And then for a game that talks so much about speed and going fast, the way you sprint in the game, which is also the way that you like wall jump and pretty much do everything of importance, you have to hold down the trigger. It's not immediate. You have to hold it for like a second or 2 seconds before it charges up and you start moving. If you even consider letting go of that trigger for any reason whatsoever, your character comes to a dead stop and just starts panting. It doesn't matter if you've been running for half a second or if you've been running for 2 minutes, he's going to stop and he's going to be out of breath for the same amount of time, no matter what. And for a game that wants you to keep moving and moving fast, it doesn't really want to let you keep moving and move fast.
Yeah, it just felt like a cheap thing to write off as a challenge. And I get it. I mean, like, there are people who enjoy doing like the speed running and stuff like that. And obviously this game's aimed at them, but everybody else, I feel like, is going to be left in the dark on this game.
Yeah.
You know?
There's just more annoyances than there are positives in this game for me. Like, even, you know, holding the trigger to start running, there's a jingle that plays, and every time that you stop running and start again, it repeats from the very beginning. So it's just going to play that same music clip over and over and over. And for a game that prides itself on, like, getting A ranks and shit like that on stages, it's really, really difficult, and I don't even know how to replay a stage or to go back and start a stage over. It just keeps moving you on to the next stage.
Yeah, this was not one of the, I mean, you've had me review a few speedrunning games on here. This was not one of the better ones. I mean, maybe pick it up if it's on sale, or maybe if you're looking for an extreme challenge and, you know, there's
you could deal with a little frustration.
A little? There's more than just a little frustration on this one.
No.
Yeah. I'm not going to recommend this one unless you are into that specific genre of games at this point.
No, like, I agree.
It's a platformer, but it's not a fun platformer.
I enjoyed the visuals at least. It had a cute cartoony
style. The art style was okay. Yeah. But that's really all I felt had going for it. But even then, you know, you just have to keep moving through the game, so you don't even really get a chance to really study it unless you keep dying in certain spots.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, Jacob, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
Nah, not really. Just wrap it up and, you know, let you get to the next one.
All right, next game to talk about is called Atom, Ancient Domains of Mystery, developed and published by Thomas Biscup. Just had a new update May 6th on Steam and runs $14.99. Deep in the mountainous ranges of the Draklore chain, chaos is broken through to Encardia. God damn, I hate names like this.
Encardia.
And it's up to you to decide the fate of the entire realm. Join a generation of gamers in playing a remastered version of this classic roguelike. So come join us as we return to Encardia and choose your fate. Checking this one out, as you heard by his voice already, Royal Sefton, how are you doing?
I am okay.
Just
stuck in Encardia. Stuck in Encardia, man.
I want to keep saying Encarta.
Encarta. Microsoft Encarta. I remember that. Before everybody had a web browser.
when I was a kid, we used our things on computers and we didn't have the internet.
But when we did have the internet, it sounded like this. That was brilliant.
Fucking dial up.
But you know what? You know what? This game... I've been calling it Adom.
Adom?
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it. It's Ancient Domains of Mystery. How about that?
Ancient Domains of Mystery. Adom works. This game began development in 94. So this game began development when most people were on dial-up if they had internet access at all.
When I was a kid.
When I was a kid, I played Adam.
Our version of Adam ran on dial-up and it went...
Although it may have been an ASCII. It may have been just character graphics.
And that would have been amazing.
Yes, this game has a tremendous heritage. It's been in active development for 24 years, but is only now coming to Steam in a Steam beta. I think it's up to version 3.20 or 3.22 now. But started life as most roguelike games of that era, being non-graphical. So text graphics, like, I mean, this isn't really a fair comparison, but ZZT, and I'm really dating myself when I bring that game up, which also just used ASCII characters to represent a game field. But each character has meaning. It might be a different type of creature, treasure chest, door, something. And as you move, a turn takes place, so the world's not entirely real time. Instead, it's truly a turn-based, very tabletop-like role-playing game with a tremendous amount of depth. I think Adam is pretty much the quintessence of function over form, or more substance than style. That's how I would categorize it. So, yeah. So basically, you're looking at a game that you could play for years upon years. And if you go through the Steam reviews, you'll see the same thing that I saw, which is you have people with hundreds or thousands of hours logged, just insane amounts of time. And they said they've been playing it. When you said a generation of gamers, that's no joke, 24 years of gameplay.
Yeah.
Because no two games are alike. The challenge is just super high, as you know, one might expect if you're familiar with roguelikes. And the amount of stuff you can do is just insane. You know, to go through what the developer lists as far as features, hundreds of monsters, hundreds of items, dozen races, 22 character classes, lots of different skills. Corruptions, so you can, it's kind of like fantasy world mutations, I guess. Different alignments, you know.
One might say there is a veritable shitload of content in this game.
Absolutely. Like, we could have the entire podcast dedicated to Adam, and we'd not get through all of it. I guarantee. It's massive. And the thing is, when I say it's more substance than style, I mean that, and not in a, I don't mean it in a deprecating or insulting way, but graphically the game is definitely, that's not the game's selling point. It has nice sprite artwork, like good pixel grade artwork as you move around in the map. And the backgrounds are also similar, like you know, sprite tile rendering. So it has it looks a little antiquated, but it is pretty. Not really animated at all though. You know, you might see your sword swing through the enemy, but it's just moving tiles, basically. So you don't buy this game and expect to be wowed visually so much as just amazed at how much you can do in the game and how long you could spend playing it.
Gotcha. So $15 on this one. What do you think of it? Is this something that someone could sink their life into for $15?
Well, in terms of just raw gameplay, $15 is a bargain. I mean, there are other roguelikes out there, some you might not pay any money for, but this is obviously not only a labor of love, but has a tremendous amount of content. It's always being updated.
I was looking on the Steam page. This version of the game originally came out in November 2015, and the fact that we're covering a recent update from May 6th, and it had an even more recent one on the 24th, so they are constantly updating this game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For me, $15, it's an insta-buy. There's always one caveat. I mean, not every game is everybody's cup of tea. If you take one look at this after spending $15 and go, I don't like it, well, you know, there may be a couple reasons for that. If you're expecting something that has a more kinetic feel to it, you know, something more Zelda, shall we say, you're going to be very disappointed. So you really got to have the right expectations going into this game. But it's like, remarkably inventive, really creative. You know, it's a really solid game. You just got to be patient with it. It will reward your patience.
Cool. Sounds good. You got one other game to talk about, and that is called Eden Rising, developed by Invisio Creations and Meridian 4, published by The Wall Productions, released May 17th on Steam Early Access for $14.99. Unite your tribe, defend the crucibles, and forge your place in Eden. Trade your humanity for the power to master the savage domain. Gather resources, craft traps and equipment, and repel the land's wild guardians in a cooperative open world of action and strategy. Royal, tell us about this one.
I'm two for two as far as winners go. This is also a really good game. I don't feel quite as strongly about it as I do, Adam, to be fair, but it's also in early access. So, mm-hmm. My take on it so far is it is an interesting combination of tower defense and open world. And so you've got this really strange, it's kind of like Tron for mushrooms, I guess I can best explain the aesthetic. It's like weird bright lights and colored blocks and other like quasi-technological designs intermeshed with a lot of plant growth and mushrooms.
Looking at the screenshots, it actually looks kind of what No Man's Sky was supposed to look like.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I could see that too. Yeah, I think that's fair. So very colorful. It looks really nice, and the frame rate's pretty good. There were a lot of complaints that I was reading about online from early access players that there were some frame rate jitters. It wasn't too bad on my system, which is fairly low end. And I don't know if it just had a really good set of defaults, but I didn't have to tune it much, and it supported an ultra wide resolution just fine. So it seems like the graphics work is really solid. Gameplay isn't entirely my cup of tea, just to be fair. You attack based on a couple different motions. You have a left click attack and a right click attack, and the right click is your strong, and the left you can combo up to 3 hits at a time, so there's a little bit of a rhythm to it. And then as you build up a meter, you kind of have a special, which is, it makes you think of like a limit break or something, but it's not as dramatic. And as you hit the enemy, you'll see numbers fly off them for damage. I guess I might start off pretty weak, but I felt like I was constantly hammering away at these critters. And not only is there not really much of a kinetic response when you're hitting them, it seems like they just sit there, soak it, and occasionally attack on a rhythm. But it seems like you spend a lot of time just whittling them down, and they can just tear right through you quickly. So the challenge feels really high right out of the gate. I don't know if there's going to be some rebalancing or if maybe I'm just not doing something right, which is certainly possible. It wouldn't be the first time I've failed to play a game correctly. But
and that's the beauty of early access, is that gives them an opportunity to rebalance and fine-tune.
Absolutely. Now, I will say there's also a really cool crafting system. So you can go about, and it feels like a Bethesda game for a moment to me, because you can run off the beaten path, off the trail, and start foraging different plants and mushrooms and stuff, and you build armor, you build weapons, you build traps that you can lay for enemies. Really, really cool. And the thing that I gathered is that rather than having like player classes or anything, it seems like your armor dictates what you become. Mm-hmm. So you pretty much all start with the same boilerplate character, which I kind of wish I had more customization there. But as you build up, you start to become more unique as you go. So some neat ideas there. You can also craft healing items, of course. And right now it supports up to 8 players. You can go at solo, and the difficulty as you open a server is based on how many players you think you will have playing at a time, which is kind of a neat tweak as well, rather than easy, medium, hard, which is kind of an abstract way of saying, how difficult I want my game to be. Your difficulty levels are like 1, 2, 4, and 8 players. And they're talking about supporting 16 once it's out of early access. And
that'd be cool.
Yeah, I'd imagine when you get a really large party going, it would be a blast.
Yeah, I'm looking at the early access stuff here. It says that there's about 30 hours of content right now. Of course, they're going to try making it bigger. I know it's $14.99 now. They are looking to increase the price of the game as the full release happens, which they're aiming for at the end of the year. So $15 on this one right now. Do you think this is worth jumping in now, or maybe waiting to see how the game, progresses over the coming months?
Well, I think that if you know that tower defense and having sort of that open world, if you think you can see those two gelling, maybe check out some gameplay videos first. To me, it's damn near an insta-buy. $15 to get in on something like this is excellent. You know, just depends on if it's your cup of tea. But for me, it's kind of a try it. I know we're still in preview, so I would say definitely worth keeping your eye on. But for $15, I can't imagine it being a better deal than that.
Cool. Man, you had some good games.
I did. I really lucked out this time. You're going to have to give me some stinkers, man.
I'm sure I could find something shitty for you. I'll look. I'll try tracking something down for you. I will fuck you over so bad if you want. I'm just going to look for the shittiest games right now and be like, hey, my friend's looking to review a shitty game. Can we review your shitty game?
And to future listeners of future SNL podcasts, I should probably just make the cautionary statement. We're not saying your game is going to be shitty if I review it, okay?
I mean, it could be. We don't know.
Yes, it's not a guarantee. Nothing's
it's a wait and see. You'll have to stay tuned, kids.
In the next inciting installment.
Oh, man. Royal, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Adam and Eden Rising. Sounds like Adam and Eve almost. And there's Eden in it, too. It's kind of funny.
All right, next game to talk about is called Smoke and Sacrifice, developed by Solar Sail Games, published by Curve Digital, released May 31st on Switch and Steam for $19.99. Sachi's home is the one tiny patch of fertile land which remains in an icy wasteland of a world. After sacrificing her firstborn child to the Sun Tree, she discovers a darker secret beneath the aura of priestly benevolence. Will she discover the truth hidden in the secret underworld or perish in its swirling, deadly smoke? Answering that question, Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Did you discover the truth or did you perish in deadly smoke?
It was that second one.
Okay.
A lot. A little bit of the first one. I guess I discovered some things. Okay, so yeah, Smoke and Sacrifice. I like to call it mom problems. because
nice.
You do play through the game as a mom. And yeah, so the lore of the whole thing is that basically, you know, they live in ice that is completely, you know, you cannot traverse the ice. It's just way too cold. And they're living a kind of pastoral existence underneath the what they call the Sun Tree, which is actually looks like the kind of like a giant version of those like lamps that they heat up McDonald's burgers under. So like they all get flame broiled under the under the light of a bunch of, you know, high wattage bulbs. Nice. But it keeps the snow away and it keeps the pug monsters away. There are giant pugs in the game for some reason. But they're not adorable. They're terrifying. This whole game is terrifying. So every person is required to sacrifice their firstborn to this tree, and you do your due diligence, of course. But then later on, you sense that your missing son is out there somewhere, and some things happen, and you actually end up getting teleported to the place where all these babies are being sent. Like, they're not actually killed; they're just sent away on a teleporter.
Interesting.
To fates unknown, exactly. So it becomes a mystery. So you you basically get dropped into the middle of this world where there are mysterious characters wearing gas masks and stuff like that, and you basically have to figure out how to create a lantern quickly, otherwise the darkness itself will eat you alive.
So I'm assuming there's crafting in the game?
Yeah, the game is actually mostly crafting. There's a little bit of combat, too. But yeah, a lot of it is walking around and picking plants and catching, like, basically the way it kind of goes is that first you pick up a stick and you find some ropey substance by defeating an enemy with your fists. And then that creates a bug catching net. And you have to learn the recipes for all these things by talking to people, of course. And that also unlocks a whole lot of the lore. So, you know, then you catch fireflies, and with fireflies you can create a lantern. So it's things like that. The story, yeah, is basically walking around in this spooky place, talking to everybody and learning all the recipes you can, and then using what you learned to survive to the next little part where you get to learn a little bit more about the mystery behind, you know, what's going on with this world.
Interesting.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple. Like, combat is literally just, you know, either punching something to death with your fists, or when the enemies get too tough, they have, what are they called? they're basically hedgehogs, but they're literally hogs. So you murder them for pork and quills, and you can combine the quills with a stick and make a mace, and then you can go to town on some of the heavier enemies. And basically it's that bit by bit you uncover more of the map, you uncover more of the mystery, and hopefully eventually you uncover your offspring. Or there's some cruel twist and it turns out to be even more depressing than it looks.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a very happy game. It's beautiful, but it doesn't look very happy.
Yeah, aesthetically it's really, really lovely to look at. It's got what I guess they call a gothic art style. Everything looks like it's basically been watercolored on. It's kind of like, it's a little bit like, the animation is a little bit like those like shows like Archer, where like they, you know, they basically draw a bunch of parts and then marionette them together.
Mm.
So it looks like that, but it works out really well. And it allows them to create some really bizarre looking things without having to commit to polygons, you know?
Nice.
Yeah, and music's nice and spooky. This one's really interesting. Like, you could really get lost in this one, especially because it's very hard. Like, you're going to spend, like, the first couple hours in here just trying to survive and not get killed by deadly gas.
Nice.
You know, and that's the thing, is that, like, you know, you have save spots, but there seems to be no way to just instantly revitalize your life. Like, you have to go find the parts and create a potion. Like, the game really gives nothing away.
You gotta earn it, man. You gotta earn it.
You gotta earn it. It's Mom Problems.
So $20 on Mom Problems. What do you think?
I think it's great. Yeah. Go ahead and get it. If you're into this sort of thing, it's not going to be real combat heavy. It's really for the survival set and people who really like a well-crafted story, because the writing is really solid. I was really hooked on it, so I want to keep playing this and find out what happened, regardless of the gameplay, but the gameplay itself is pretty cool. Nice. Like I said, there's lots of recipes, lots of things to do, lots of things to gather, and it's, you know, it's resource management at the same time as, you know, reading a cool story.
Well, from resource management to stat management, the next game to talk about is called Punch Club, developed by Lazy Bear Games, published by Tiny Build, released May 24th on the Switch for $14.99. Train hard, fight crocodiles, and find love. Earn your place in the Punch Club ranks and discover who brutally murdered your father in this choose-your-own-adventure boxing management tycoon. Chris, what did you think of Punch Club?
Oh man, Punch Club. This is a game and a half. Like, it's exhausting. So I thought it was actually going to be like a brawler, like something pretty simple. But then I get into it and it turns out it's a resource and stat management like par excellence. Like, it's just nuts with the stats. So yeah, you start off as a shirtless guy and the first thing you have to do is figure out how to eat. You have to go to the store and buy things to eat, and you either have to work or fight in order to earn money, or you can mooch some off of your coach. And it's just like from there, it's like you go from the humble beginnings of everything being in level one and you're trying to afford a steak so that you can make it through the day to actually fighting in competitive like fights, or delivering pizzas on a bicycle, or breaking up a road, or joining an illegal underground fight club, or literally wrestling alligators that look suspiciously like Ninja Turtles in the sewers. So there's actually a lot of things you can do. Oh, you can become a superhero too.
Because why not, right?
Because why not? And, you know, and yeah, I guess there's love in there somewhere. I don't know. I haven't found it yet, but who has?
Gotta look in different places, man. Looking for love in all the wrong places.
Right. So the main tick of this one is that in order to increase your stats and make yourself a better fighter, you have to work out, or work or do something. Mostly it's going to the gym or saving up a lot of money and buying a gym. And you know, you have three stats. You have your strength, agility, and speed. And basically, the game warns you against trying to advance all three. There's actually a whole skill tree set, just like any good RPG that, you know, is out right now, where you can actually choose a path that favors strength, agility, or speed, and you get special moves in there. It becomes way too expensive to try and boost all three at once, although I suppose you could do it, because the thing is that your stats actually go down with time. Every time a day passes, you actually lose some stats. But then if you've added on to that stat more than you've lost, then you get a net gain. Yeah. However, you cannot be lazy at any point in this whole game. That's why it's exhausting. So you have to be, like, if you have money for the gym, go to the gym, work out. If you have money for food, go buy food and eat it and rest on your couch. You have, like, this, you have four different stats dealing with what you're able to do. You have your heart stat, which goes down as you fight, but it goes up as you do anything else. So I don't know. I don't know what that means. Then you have your hunger stat, your sleepy stat, and your happy stat. And you have to basically keep everything, like, full and all that in order to not only, you know, be able to work and earn money and do all and work out at the gym, but also to, you know, just, I guess, keep yourself sane. Oh, also you don't gain as much stats if your those stats are too low. So you have to raise those stats before you can raise the other stats.
No.
So this game, as you can tell, it's quite a time sink. you'll pick this one up and easily dump 3 hours into it without noticing. And then your guy's like got a level 5 strength or something. He's learned like one of the bear moves because the bear is the strength favoring move. And then, you know, you're like sitting there entering fights, and win or lose, you earn some money. It's not a big deal if you lose. And then as soon as you win a fight, you end up with like three more things you can do. Like, they just keep adding on and keep adding on. It is such a full game.
So it keeps you busy.
Yeah. And aesthetically, it looks a lot like, it's just really good pixel art, very nice and detailed, lots and lots of little Easter eggs and in-jokes here and there. Even the title screen has a Darkwing Duck reference. you'll just have to find it yourself. And the soundtrack is really, really good. Like, this is a soundtrack I would purchase separately from the game. And it's just chiptune, you know, turned up to like 80s metal and, you know, 80s fight music, like, you know, something from Rocky.
Yeah. How's the performance on the Switch? Because we covered this game quite a long time ago on other platforms, and I'm curious to hear how it holds up on the Switch.
I didn't notice any problems. There weren't any glitches. Graphics looked just fine. Interface is fine. Like, I didn't notice any problems. They might have fixed it all.
Well, no, there weren't any problems. I was just wondering how well it played on the Switch in general.
Oh, okay, because we're assuming the Switch might underperform. Nah, it performs fine.
Cool. So $15 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's great and worth a shot. If you're looking for, like, really unique games, you know, something like this is a worthwhile one to look out for. It's more for the nerds than for the adrenaline junkies. You don't even control yourself during fights. You just sit back and watch them play out and hope that your stats outdo their stats, you know?
Yeah.
And a little bit of luck, of course. Obviously. But I mean, the reward factor is really good, but yeah, this one's definitely, this is more for the nerds who just like that 80s-ness of it all.
Nice. And we got one final game to talk about tonight. I know it's been a marathon. Can you believe this is our 12th game to talk about tonight?
Wow.
12.
That's amazing.
I'm fucking tired. I want to end this.
so many games.
Final game to talk about is called Jumping Joe and Friends, developed by Vixa Games and Cubic Games, published by Cubic Games, released May 25th on the Switch for $4.99. Help Joe and his fellas on their upward journey. Be quick as a flash and dodge roaring cannonballs, vicious bats, and other traps. Perform high scores or leave your competitors in the dust. Chris, what is this besides named after me?
It is your game. You saved the best for last.
Yay!
Okay, so Jumping Joe and Friends is I want to call it like a platforming simulator. It's hard to describe. It's not really a platformer because you have two buttons and two things that you can do. From any one plane that you're standing on, and it's just like it's kind of like Ice Climbers. It's just like you go up and up and up and up and up. And there's platforms. They're either going to be to the left of you or the right of you. You push the left shoulder for left. You push the right shoulder for right. There are no other controls. So you can also do like A and B, or you know, R1 is whatever. You're gonna wind up using the shoulder buttons.
It keeps it simple.
It keeps it simple, although it's deceptively simple, because you'll be like sitting there, like, you know, going like left, left, right, 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 left, 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 right, right, left. No, 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 I wasn't supposed to go left there. My finger just did it. Like, you end up getting into a rhythm because you're timed, of course. There's a bed of lava that's like flowing up to meet you. So it's and yeah, the whole point of the game is to get as high as possible. And
that's for later.
Right. I'm just thinking about how to make Jumping Joes into a drug reference. Anyway,
God.
I'm not cool enough for this. The thing that keeps you hooked on this game is that you collect coins, or they're kind of like baubles, jewels, I guess. They change with the level, with the landscape, but you collect as many of them as you can on your way up, and you try to beat your previous score, of course, but your score gets added to a total, which allows you to unlock more things. And God, there are so many things to unlock. There's a whole game mode to unlock. There's like, it looked like about 30 characters to unlock, each of them with its own unique benefit. So your starting character can take 2 hits, but your second character that you can unlock can sail straight ahead to like 50 levels up, I guess. And, you know, tends to get more rockets and stuff. And then, like, the next one after that, you know, it's just all kinds of stuff. And they're all, like, really wacky little characters. You know, they just look like little heads of a bobblehead or something like that, with a hat on, usually, because they have to have something happen to when they get hit once. So the dangers of the game, of course, are spiky floors. If you jump on one and it's got spikes, then that's bad. Usually you'll jump on one and there'll be 2 platforms above you on the left and right that have spikes, but one of them will disappear as soon as you get up there. So you really have to keep an eye on what's happening. There's like flying enemies, and there's buzzsaws, and you know, there's all kinds of dangers. So you can take one hit and then, you know, the next hit and you're dead, but you can also restore that hit with an item if you find it. So like cool things like that. But yeah, like everything that you do, basically, the more you play, the more you unlock, which is a really addicting way of doing things. And the game itself moves so fast, and it's got a catchy tune, and it's like, you know, it's the most primal of it calls on the most primal of gamer instincts, and that is to get the best score and unlock the next thing.
Yeah, and it's always one more run.
Exactly. This is that kind of game to a T. And I actually had a chance to play this 2-player with my roommate, and an interesting thing about 2-player mode is that it's the same thing, except that you're actually racing. So you're not trying to get as high as you can. You're trying to get higher than the other person in the amount of time that you select. So you can even have just a 5-second round where you just try to get as high as you can in 5 seconds, or you can do it for minutes. There's certain parameters you can set like that, the amount of hits that you can take, and every character is actually unlocked in 2-player mode, so you can actually experiment with, different characters. I think it's because they don't have their special power, so it's just picking a character, and we had some favorites. My favorite was Grandma.
Oh, God.
you can have a grandma head jumping up, and, as she jumps up, like every character that jumps up, like the animation leaves behind something. So like you have a bird character that leaves behind feathers, things like that. Grandma leaves behind hearts. So although it's a little disturbing to run Grandma's face into a chainsaw and have it explode into red pixels, but yeah, that's what you get for picking Grandma.
Yeah, just that'll teach you.
Leave that Grandma alone. Oh, she loves you, but she's had enough.
This one sounds cute as hell, so I gotta know, $5 on it, what is your verdict?
$5, this is exactly the kind of game where you're gonna want to buy it and get a friend on the couch, and both of y'all pick up a Joy-Con, or, you know, if you're in my case, one of the pro controllers or something like that. I buy the fancy controllers. and just tell them, hey, let's do a few rounds, and do a few rounds. Like, plus this is cheap. A great game for that. Yeah, it's so cheap. And but no, it's really good quality. Like, it is exactly a $5 game, but it's a very, very good game for $5.
It's a well-made $5 game.
Yes, exactly.
Good stuff. Well, Chris, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Thanks again to everyone who was on the show, especially to Kenny from Extra Mile Studios for coming on and chatting with us.
Ray.
I just want to end this fucking episode. So, Chris, give me some final words so I can stop recording.
Leave that grandma alone.